The giant, leading the Welsh, had held us long enough to plan his action. Now I could see that he was leading his men down from the battlements and swinging round to the gateway. I looked that way, expecting that Harold would lead a counter-attack with the 100 men he held in reserve at the gate. Then I saw that there was no reserve company. Over on the other side of the battle, Sabbat's men had been swept off the battlements and down into the camp, so Harold had committed the reserve to repel them back over the wall. That meant that, as the chieftain led his 50 men towards the gate, there were just 10 of our warriors there, struggling to hold the gates shut as Owain forced his way in. The men at the gate never saw the danger until it was too late. With a vicious cry, the giant chieftain hacked two down with the same swing of his huge blade, and in an instant his men had killed the others. They were busy clearing the rubble we had piled up against the gates. Soon, the gates would be opened, and if that happened... "Wixton Company, follow me!" I shouted, and without seeing if they followed, I ran along the battlements to the steps. Now, as I tumbled down them, I did glance back and saw that almost the whole company was following me. Save half a dozen men, Grettir had ordered to stay with him and guard the wall. It was a risk. Whilst we abandoned the wall, the enemy might bring more men across, but the gates were critical. If the gates opened, then all was lost. At the gates, the last of the rubble had been cleared, and now the bar was being lifted. I had no time to form up into any formation. "Charge!" was all I could find the breath to yell, as we crashed into the rear of the Welsh, and a confused, swirling melee began. Now again, all the senses were bombarded and overwhelmed, and in the end, ignored. All that was left was an almost blind madness, as you lay about you at anything that moved, and hoped to the gods it was an enemy, and not a friend. We fought with fury and abandon, as we strived to reach the gate and prevent it from opening. But we failed. With a thud, the bar was dropped to the ground, and the chieftain himself reached out his two arms and pulled the gates open. 20 yards away, Owain was standing surrounded by hundreds of warriors, rallying them after the latest charge at the door had failed. Scores had died trying to force their way in. Now they gave a huge shout of triumph and came on again. The chieftain had turned and saw me advancing on him. He laughed and swung his monstrous sword round in a huge arc, aiming to cut me in two. The sword never reached me. Edward just charged straight at the man with his shield in front of him. They both fell in a heap, but it was Edward who got up. The chieftain was writhing on the ground with a dagger in his belly. He spat at Edward and then died. We had killed the Welsh who had opened the gate, and now Edward, Aidan and I stood in the opening, with the 20 men that were all that were left from our company. Outside the gates, 500 enemy warriors charged towards us. Owain reached us first, with his armour shining in the sunlight, giving him the appearance of a bronze statue or a warrior god in his full glory. His huge house troops, all wearing chain armour and carrying vicious-looking two-handed swords, charged with him. There was no time for terror now, just cut and thrust, the ramming of shields, wheeling round, dodging blows, staggering backwards, then recovering and advancing again. All the time, we were being pushed back into the camp, and at that moment, I was certain that we were doomed. Harold and Sabbat were leading their men down from the battlements to join us, but I could sense it was futile. Ethelric himself was now beside me and swung wildly with his blade at Owain, but the smile on the King of Reged's face told me that he knew it was all but over. That just got me angry, boiling mad in fact, at the stupidity of everything. After all our efforts we would die here, and Dara would fall. My family would mourn me, and as for little Mildred, Samlin would celebrate his victory. That made me wonder where Samlin was, no doubt somewhere in the battle, but not where I could get to him and stop him from touching my sister, unless I could kill Owain. Then rage and fury gave me strength, and I came back at the Golden King, hacking and recklessly at his armour, ignoring the pain as his guards smashed swords against my shield or took slices out of my arms and legs. The fury took him by surprise as he stumbled over the chieftain's body, slipped in his guts, and then, with a cry, he fell. And I was on him in an instant, and plunged my sword into his throat. His eyes met mine, and in them was shock and denial. His plans and dreams of glory bled away with his blood into the soil of Cattraeth Field, and then he was dead. Suddenly there was a moment of silence as all on both sides looked on in stunned disbelief. Into that silence came the other sound I remember from Cattraeth as I sit in sweat-soaked terror recovering from my nightmares, the clear sound of more horns. Not horns from Elmet, Strathclyde, Regid, or even the Gododdin, but English horns heralding an English army, Bernician horns. Ethelfrith had come. There was another great fanfare off to the northwest. This came from out beyond the enemy's left wing. For a moment I stared that way, but could see nothing because of the palisades. Then Grettir shouted down from the battlements, "Woden's buttocks, it's the Bernicians! Ethelrith is here! They've come to the battle!" In front of me, the enemy confidence waned and fear came upon their faces. A few backed away, more joined them, and with the clattering and dropped weapons and shields, they started to run. I ran too, but up to the battlements joined by Ethelric, Sabbat and Harold, and we stared out onto the battlefield to see if the Bernicians had come, after all. And indeed they had. 1,000 spears had marched south from Bernicia and crossed the Tees. Like a shadow rolling across the fields they came onwards, moving relentlessly to fall on the fleeing enemy. A murmur ran amongst our men who were crowding the battlements, and I looked to see what had caused it. Then, for the first time, I saw the man who would have such an effect on my early years. He walked forward between two companies, surrounded by half a dozen cruel-looking house guards, yet he was taller than any of them, by several inches. He wore a pair of leather breeches and a tunic of tough brown cloth, over which he had a shirt of metal rings. By his side, a great sword hung from a shoulder strap. His grey cloak, billowed about by the wind, served to exaggerate his size. Crowning all was a helm of iron, with metal bands and strips that were extended to form nose and cheek guards. He was still young, perhaps 25 years or so, although a light brown beard gave him the appearance of being a few years older. This, then, was the man who had fought under his father in the siege on Lindisfarne, and helped him to take advantage of the chaos following Urien's death. After Firebrand's death, Ethelfrith had unified the scattered Bernicians and finally secured a kingdom on the Tweed. That was not enough, for he had fought battles further afield to weaken his enemies, and now he strode forward to confront the last chance those enemies had to defeat him. This was Ethelfrith. When the Bernicians joined the battle, it was really over in minutes. They cut into the rear of the enemy, obliterating the brave Gododdin cavalry and rolling up the Welsh army. More and more outflanked, the Welsh from north of the wall were dying. The Gododdin had perished. The pressure there mounted until suddenly the entire army's morale cracked like an acorn under a shoe, and they were running westwards towards the pass like a flood. The Bernicians pursued them, and with a shout of joy, we Darens ran after them, eager for revenge. In the release of fear that followed, a blood madness overcame us. We took no prisoners, and slew all we could catch. The attempt to restore the Welsh kingdom of the Pennines had failed. The finest, best-equipped, and noblest of the warriors of the Old North were dead. Never again would the Welsh field an army of such quality and size, an echo of the armies of Rome. We halted our pursuit at the pass to Regid and turned back. After that, the armies moved towards the enemy camps and the looting began. The dead and the wounded were searched for gold, for fine swords, for beads, for anything of value. Such has ever been the reward of victory. Suddenly, a cold terror gripped my heart. Somewhere on one of these camps was Mildrith. No doubt somewhere also here was Samlin, my uncle's sword, and the amber treasure as well. But all that counted as naught if I could just find Mildrith. I glared around me at Darren and Bernician alike, friends who now became enemies if they reached my sister first. With their blood burning flute, would they ignore other lusts if they found her? "Mildrith!" I shouted. Near me, Aidan and Edward heard me, and the expressions on their faces showed me they too realized my fear. "Mildrith!" we all shouted, and started running across the battlefield. Chapter 17. Mildred. I stopped running after a few moments, realizing it was futile to just go on ambling around the battlefield. I needed to think. I had seen no sign of Owain's main camp when we pursued the Welsh across the southern half of the battlefield, and it certainly had not been down the slope that ran to the Reged Road. Think, Herdic, think, I urged myself. Owain's army had come across the mountains down that road, but the road slanted southeast towards Cattraeth, while Stanwick Camp was due east of the pass. So, Owain would probably have swung off the road towards the fortress. Then, with night approaching soon, he would have set up an encampment somewhere along the way. Ethelfrith's charge coming from the north had forced the fleeing Welsh to take a more southerly route at first. So their route, and our pursuit, had not taken us through their camp, nor, at any time, had we seen Samlin, Mildred, or Husser. I wondered if perhaps Samlin had spotted the disaster earlier than most on the battlefield, and knew that all was lost. What would he do? Or, come to think of it, what would Husser do? What, on this entire battlefield, was worth the entire value of almost everything else on it? That was an easy question, with an easy answer. The amber treasure, the treasure Samlin had paraded on his captured girls. Certainly he would take no chances with that. He would send it back to camp. Now that the battle was lost, that was where they would be. Quick, lads, this way, and pray to the gods that we are the first there. Gasping for breath as we ran, we headed north towards the direction that I estimated Owain's men were marching from when we had first seen them. As we ran, we passed heaps of bodies from the previous day's battle, many mauled horrendously, ghastly pale in appearance, covered in dried blood and pecked at by birds. Here and there we saw groups of two or three Welsh warriors who had tried to hide, but having been caught, were being made to suffer through their agonizing final moments by vengeful Deirans or Bernicians. Many of our army had lost friends on this battlefield, and they made the captives pay for it. A scream broke out close to us, as a doomed youth was held down by a dozen Deiran warriors, whilst another of the victors approached with a burning log and moved it towards his skin. I looked away, suddenly sickened by the sight, but I could not avoid hearing the terrible screeching pleas for mercy, nor the nauseating smell of burning flesh. We ran on past a few larger groups of Welshmen, who were fighting desperate last-ditch stands, 20 here or 30 there, but surrounded now by many scores of angles. One group of proud-looking veterans were clustered together around the tattered remains of their once proud banner. A dozen of them locked shields and slowly retreated towards the mountains. Around them the battlefield was full of English warriors baying and yelling for their blood. Fresh corpses littered the ground around the enemy, showing that these men were making us pay for each of their lives. Yet, as I glanced back at them, I saw our men rush once more at them, and, like Wallace's standard last night, their banner finally fell. Up ahead there was a copse of trees, which we entered and passed through. Beyond it was an empty field with a slope running away to the north, but still no camp visible. There, Edward said, pointing his finger. Off to the west we saw a cloud of smoke that must have come from many fires. It was at least half a mile away, and feeling exhausted I groaned. Beside me, Edward and Aidan looked set to collapse. Still, full of fear as I was about Mildred's fate, I found enough strength to push us on again until we came to a little hillock, beyond which we could see the smoke rising. Reaching the top, with our lungs burning and limbs stiff, we paused now to catch our breath, and I could see that at last we had found what we were searching for. The Welsh camp lay in the small valley beneath us, on either side of a narrow stream which had come down from the mountains. A dozen tents were surrounded by at least 100 campfires, most long since burnt out. Three of the tents were already on fire, and, with dismay, I saw that we were not, in fact, the first to arrive. Indeed, we were far from the first. 100 or so Angles, mostly Bernicians, were here before us, and were moving around the fires, looking into any sacks or bundles they found for coins or any items of worth. Then they pressed on towards the tents, which promised yet more loot. Was Mildred in one of them? I launched myself down the slope, followed by Edward and Aidan, who came hurtling after me, our spears, shields and swords clattering against each other as we slid and stumbled towards the camp. Several Benicians turned their head at the sound, and seeing us rushing towards them, hurried to pick up their weapons, and moved in our direction, snarling at us. Before they reached me, I slid to a halt, lifted up my arms, and shouted, "Wait there, we are Daren, not Welsh!" Aidan wisely kept silent at this point. "Yeah, mate, well, so what? We rescued your hide, so we get first pickings here. Piss off!" An ugly-looking brute speaking strangely accented English growled at us. Several other Benicians gathered around him and glared at us, daring us to fight. "Relax, friends, you can have anything you find except—"
"Except what? You're keeping the good stuff from us, then?"
"No, I'm looking for a girl."
"Look, friend, we all want one of those, you know what I mean?"
"This one is his sister, arsehole, and if any of you have touched her, you'll have me to answer to," Edward shouted.
The Benicians took one look at my huge friend and his axe still glistening with blood, and then it was they who now held out their hands.
"Hey now, we're all friends, no need to get angry. But honestly, lads, there are no girls here. You might try the tents," their leader said, pointed that way, keen, now it seemed, to be rid of us.
We ran that way, splitting up to search each tent, but found that by now most had been ransacked. As we searched, we could see no one, other than the Benicians drinking the ale they had captured. One of them burped loudly and grinned at me. "You seen any Welsh running away from here, mate?" I asked the man, not expecting an answer. He surprised me by nodding amiably.
"What, you mean about half a dozen of them, along with some women?"
I stared at him.
"Yes, are you serious?" I asked, waving Aidan and Edward over to me. "Yes, of course," the man sounded hurt. "I was just about the first into the camp and saw several jars of beer, so I, acquired them, along with this."
He patted a bulging sack which clinked and promised riches within. He was welcome to them. I just wanted to know where Mildred was.
"Which way?" I asked urgently. "Eh? Which way did they run?" "All right, let me see."
"Hurry, man, please," I said, stamping my foot.
"All right, don't rush me," he replied as he scratched his head and took another swig of his ale, and then at last pointed. "That way, to the west, towards the forest."
"Thanks," I shouted, already on the way, followed by Edward and Aidan.
"Eh?"
the man repeated, and then burped again. But by then we had left him and the camp behind and headed towards the woods. The trees were a good couple of miles away, but I thought I could see a few pines or spruce mixed in with what would be the usual oaks and willows. The land had started to rise towards the mountains, and we came across the stream that ran through the Welsh camp and followed it back up its course towards the woodland. We were totally alone now as we walked across the fields and meadows, and so tired that we still did not speak. Soon, the only sound was the trampling of our feet, the gentle rattling of the equipment swaying on our shoulders, and the gurgling of the water in the brook, fed by melted snow in the uplands, and now rushing past us over its rocky path. After a half an hour, we passed a small stand of birch trees. When we emerged from the far side, Aidan suddenly hissed at me and nodded with his head towards our left. There, about 20 men were coming in our direction from the south. I turned warily towards them, drawing my sword, then peering that way, my other hand shielding my eyes from the late afternoon sunlight which silhouetted them. Like dark shadows they walked on, not afraid of us, nor stopping to draw their own weapons. Still unable to see who it was, I was about to challenge them, when Edward suddenly laughed and waved at the men. A moment later, I too saw who they were, and felt a huge weight had been lifted from me. First, I saw Cuthbert walking along with his bow held in his hand. Next to him was the bard, Lila. Finally, I saw the man who I most wanted to see, the man who, these last few days, I had been almost afraid to hope would come. I saw my father. Edward cheered when he recognised his friend and ran straight over to give him a huge hug. Cuthbert blushed at this, but was smiling as Edward stepped back.
"About bloody time you got here. How long did it take you to find the damn Benician army then?"
Edward demanded. Cuthbert looked hurt.
"To be fair, most of the fires had gone out by the time I reached them, and it was a sod of a long way,"
Cuthbert defended himself, and then halted when he saw that Edward was winking at me and miming a stirring a pot action.
"Bastard," Cuthbert said to Edward, and they both laughed.
I clapped a hand down on Cuthbert's shoulder and nodded at him. "I knew you would make it, Cuth. Damn well done all the same. Thanks, Curdick." I then walked up to my father. He was looking tired and drawn, a man noticing he was not as young as he once was. Lila, fresh as ever, was bouncing along beside him. "Father," I said, "thanks to the gods that you came. It was bloody close, I'll tell you." He studied me, a caring father checking his son, inspecting him for damage maybe, or perhaps assessing if the last few days had changed him much. After a moment, he pulled me to him and gave me a huge hug before letting me go, then stood with one hand on my left shoulder, looking into my eyes. "I told you I would come, but it took a little longer than I had hoped," he said. "In fact, it's a fascinating story, worth a song. Would you like to hear it?" Lila began, but I interrupted him. "Another day, maybe. But Father, Samlin and Husser still have Mildred, and then they went into those woods. They might be trying to sneak over the mountains by some footpath, or..." Father's eyes narrowed, and I could see that the same thought had come to us both. Samlin could injure us still more this day, if he carried through with his threats about Mildred. He turned to the men who were following him, all that were left from the village, and still more from Wixton. "Right then, men, follow us. 10 of you come with me, and Lila, the other 10, follow Curdick and his friends. We will divide the wood between us." It was now getting far on through the afternoon, and the sun was starting to descend in the western sky as we again moved across the fields towards the woodlands. I was walking in the centre with my patrol strewn out on either side of me, scouring the scrub and brush for signs of Samlin and his men. After a few minutes, we came across a faint track running through the field towards the woods, and we followed it. About half a mile further south, Father and his warriors were matching our speed. We had been gone from the Welsh camp for a good hour already now, and as yet we had seen nothing except a startled hare, which Cuthbert had immediately shot with an arrow. "Well, I've got my supper arranged. What about you guys?" he smirked at us. Then he tied the hare to his belt and scampered off out of range of Edward's fist. That had been a few minutes before now, and I noticed him up ahead, waving at us to catch up. As he would often do in the years to come, he was scouting in front of us, using his stealth and speed to his advantage. "I think there may be some of those Gododdin in the woods over there. I saw some of that strange blue armour glinting in the trees." The track continued west, climbing towards the mountains. We moved along it until we finally reached the woods. There was quite a bit of undergrowth, but I could see no sign of the fugitives. I turned to look at my friend who, in response to my expression, pointed to the scrub beneath a tall elm tree. Suddenly, there was a yellow-brown flash as late afternoon sun reflected off something metallic. The woods were the last bit of cover before the bare hillsides beyond. Perhaps the Welsh were afraid to leave them and to go where we would surely see them, or maybe they were injured or even dead. Whatever the reason, we should be able to call on them here, I thought to myself. "Edward, take 5 men and wait here. I will take the other 6 and move round the other side of the copse to prevent escape. Wait for my whistle, then move in fast."
"Fine, Curdick," my friend said. Reliable Edward, not very imaginative, but he could take orders. I led my men around the northern edge of the wood, all the time keeping the glinting armour in sight. It did seem odd that whoever was wearing it was not moving. They must see us, I thought. Beyond the trees was a ditch, along the wood's edge, and I now led my small group along it, with Aidan just behind me and Cuthbert bringing up the rear. Another 50 paces, and I halted, and we now stood in a line looking across the woods. I could just see Edward's bulk through the trees. I whistled a long, drawn-out note. With a roar, I had never known him do much without a bellow or roar, he surged forward, leading his half of the patrol through the woods. They were upon the Welsh position in a moment, and I expected to hear screams and cries and the noise of battle. Yet, I saw Edward halt and glance over at me, and then bend down. When he came back up, he was holding pieces of the burnished armour. They had just been abandoned, I imagined. Unless it was a trap. Suddenly, from the undergrowth, only 20 paces in front of us, there erupted a half-dozen Welshmen. They had smeared mud on their faces, and some had stuck leaves and grass into their hair. That, and the fact we were looking beyond them, had been sufficient to deceive us. They had few weapons save surprise, some swords and the odd sturdy branch. That, though, was enough. They rushed at us, knocked us over, or lashing at us with branches. Most I had not seen before, but one I did recognise, for it was Husser who rushed directly at me. His shoulder hit me in the chest, and I went down into the ditch with the air knocked out of me. A heartbeat later, and he was leaping at the ditch and running off towards the mountains.
It took me a few moments to catch my breath and to clamber, mud-covered and winded, out of the ditch. By then the Welsh were 50 yards away and going fast. Cuthbert, I saw, had blood coming from a cut on his head, but he was still standing at least. None of the boys were dead, although some groaned, and Horser, a youth from Wixton, was holding his wrist and wincing as if it was broken. Cuthbert essayed a shot at the fleeing Welshman, but it sailed far wide of the target. Husser now turned to check the others were with him, and to wave them on past. Then he gazed back at us, and on over the tops of the trees towards the camp, and finally the battlefield at Cattraeth. For a moment he looked straight at me. Then, with a wave, he turned and was off. Behind me I heard Edward arrive. "Well, we buggered that up, didn't we?" he grunted. I turned and gave him what I hoped was a withering glare, and with a sigh led the boys off in pursuit. The ground started to climb much more acutely now, and there was little undergrowth and no trees. The fleeing Welsh were still ahead of us, and now they joined by another group of warriors, one of whom glared back at us with his one eye. There, then, at last, was the scarred face of Samlin. Aidan hissed and doubled his pace, and I did nothing to stop him, for I had seen that Samlin was dragging along the struggling form of my sister. My father's men closed in on us, and reunited now, we pursued the Welsh. We now passed the start of steep, bare-faced cliffs jutting out from the mountain. Our prey had moved into a valley between the cliffs, but then, at last, they turned and faced us, as it was a dead end, and for them there was now no escape. Hurriedly, Samlin's men formed up into a shield wall, using the few shields they still had. Behind this stood Husser, Samlin, and Mildred. Husser had planted the wolf's head banner next to him, maybe trying to goad and taunt us. It was a mistake. It made us angry, and gave us just one more reason to kill them all. Samlin still held Mildred, and now he drew his dagger and placed it against her throat. "Stop there, or I kill the girl!" Samlin shouted. "Samlin, leave her alone and fight me like a man. If you win, all of you will leave us as free men," I said. Samlin spat towards me. "I told you once, I don't fight slaves." Aidan shouted something in Welsh, then stepped forward, his sword and shield ready. Samlin stared at him for a moment, and then replied in the same language. "Aidan, what's going on?" I asked. "He asked me if I would fight a free man of his own race, or die a coward," Samlin said, growling and letting Mildred go. He pushed through his own men, then dropped his knife and drew his sword. Then I looked again and saw that I was wrong. It was not his blade. This was my uncle's sword, the sword I had come here to retrieve. "Very well, Eberarkai. Let's see how well you fight."